Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. Along with me this evening is one of our finest guests ever of all time, Tony Gosling from Bristol, England. Welcome, Tony Gosling.
Every time you speak to me, George, you big me up.
Oh, okay.
Even more than the last time.
I'm bailing you up, Tony.
Well, someone's got to. I think we're living in such an interesting time. The reason I say that is because the indications are there more and more and more of a coming World War III. And I don't say that lightly. I say that almost like the Jimi Hendrix All Along the Watchtower kind of way.
Okay.
Which is where we need to be warning the population just how close we're coming. Because the thing is, the mainstream media isn't. And if you remember this term, fake news is something they do. Remember weapons of mass destruction? They do it. And yet what they're doing, like some kind of psychopath, is projecting, and in fact this is something you can look up in all your books about psychology, projecting that onto people like me, who are telling the truth. And so the bloggers and the alternative media around the world are being branded as the ones who are twisting things, lying. Well, of course, there are some websites out there deliberately twisting and lying things, and it probably wouldn't be fair to me of me to say which ones I think they are. But I think you'll find that there are quite a few even well-known alternative media outlets which are, okay, so they're probably telling you the truth and exposing the truth on 90%, but the key 10%, they will be spinning in the wrong direction. So in a way, there's a truth to the fact that there's fake news out there in the alternative media. But most of that fake news in the alternative media is deliberate. It's there to discredit the alternative media. So this whole term, fake news, is a massive, I think, imposition on journalistic freedom. And that we're not getting any journalistic professionalism from the mainstream. The way you can tell that is what you do is you go and have a look at what's on your TV now, whether it's CNN, whether it's NBC, ABC, BBC, whoever it is, and you sit, and I think any discerning viewer now, or listener to the radio, needs to be really, and in fact you're not going to understand what the hell is going on unless you do this. That is to say, look at the news reports. Are they balanced? Have you got both sides of the argument? And I'm not talking about having necessarily, you know, both sides, people representing both sides, like in the, you know, two lawyers in the court or something.
Right.
But is the presenter picking up on the views of the opposite side and putting them to the person who's being interviewed? I mean, what we're seeing now is the total throwing away of this very important technique in journalism, which is balance. You've got to have the sides of the argument. And what we're getting now is our politicians, certainly here in the UK, they're not getting any real criticism over the major problems that we've got. Like, one is the state paedophilia, which has been going on within the state system, within the Home Office, which Prime Minister Theresa May was running for most of her political government career. She was running the department, which was responsible for the paedophilia and allowing it to go on. So these questions are not being put to the people in power, and we're not getting balance. So when you see a story like we've got at the moment with the Catalonia referendum,
right,
which is a fascinating example, what we're seeing quite a lot is the kind of official government view. Well, there's a few little bits of, you know, maybe someone in the street in Catalonia saying, I don't think this is fair. But what we're not getting is we're not getting the polls, George. And this is a sure sign that we're living in a propaganda age. And that in itself is a sign that war could be coming. Also, looking at Google and YouTube, massive demonetization of some of the best channels on YouTube. That is to say, people, even if they're getting a million hits, they're not getting a penny for it. Because YouTube have decided arbitrarily that the advertisers don't want to go on their channel, and so they've demonetized the channels. We've just been doing a little investigation into some of the people that this has been being done to. Some of them, some of the best commentators in the world, are now being totally starved of finance by Google. The other thing Google did with their new, well, it's not new anymore, it came out in April, their new algorithm is completely delisting important websites. Like, for example, Michael Tyler here in the UK, he's a software engineer, he's worked in China, very experienced young man, but he has a sideline as an investigative journalist looking into the deaths of 80 or so bankers over the last 3 years. his site, parts of his website, it's just his own little blog, have been completely scrubbed from the Google index. So however hard you look on Google, you will never find his investigations, George. This is a sure sign that we are living in an age where the powers that be, that is to say the Atlanticists, the New World Order, whatever right. you want to call them, are preparing for a big war.
You know, yeah, that's a good point, Tony. And Kevin Shipp, who is a CIA whistleblower, he came out with a program about a year ago, but he says that America is in a post-constitutional phase of government. That's what he's saying.
Well, that's quite true. Of course, we don't really have a constitution, not a written constitution. We have an unwritten constitution.
Right,
that's what
they
like to call it. Yeah, we have the Queen in charge, really. I mean, she makes a lot of the big decisions about appointments in some of the key positions in the military intelligence, even supposedly having a veto over the Prime Minister. And also in many of the tax havens around the world, the protectorates, they're called, or the places like the Channel Islands, the British Virgin Islands, tax havens, the Queen is appointing the people running these places, where really, of course, what she should be doing is putting them in jail for laundering money, etc. So, you know, we've got a real serious problem at the top of our society. I think it's probably true to say both sides of the Atlantic. But what worries me more than anything is that the internet is there to make sure that at least the truth is out there somewhere, like they say on the X-Files. And once people are trusting Google to find stuff, which is, you know, let's face it, I mean, you and I, everybody, used to use Google to find the stuff that the other search engines might not be able to find. It was actually a very efficient algorithm that would find the actual stuff you were searching for in your search terms. But we're now living in an age where even if you've got the exact search term of the thing you're looking for, Google is never going to let you see it.
Right. They have languages that could be described as part of the semantic web that are running on big, fast servers. And one of those languages is called OWL, and it's ontology language web. And it's going to redefine, I've seen this for several years, is that behind the scenes they're going to redefine subjects and objects and philosophies and all these other things to suit their new world order. It's happening from behind the scenes.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I think that obviously the people to watch are at Google particularly are the engineers, the
right.
tech engineers. These are the people who, you know, they're also talked about as the transhumanists,
right.
the people who are trying to weld the internet, that is to say Google, into the human mind. So the idea is to sort of get those interfaces going. There, I mean, there have been experiments in Petri dishes with great sort of arrays of electrodes. In amongst those electrodes, loads of little nerve cells growing. So the idea is that the nerve cells can be transmitted through electrodes into a computer. I mean, these are the sorts of, I mean, you would think these were crazy experiments, but the scientists that have been doing them are saying, well, this array of nerve cells in this Petri dish is thinking. You know, it's got consciousness, and it can detect, for example, it can see things, you know, like it's like an optic nerve cell.
Oh, my God.
If you put this through the, if you put this through an interface, then these nerve cells can fly a plane. I'm talking about a plane simulator, yeah?
Right, so, okay.
Okay, these sorts of experiments have been done. I mean, I've got no way of verifying them, but it does look as if that there is a big attempt, lots of money being spent in order to try and, you know, bridge this gap between the brain and the computer. Not only that, you've got a lot of effort going into genetic engineering with some of these transhumanists saying, well, by the year 2040, we could have genetically engineered human beings so that they don't age, this kind of thing. So this is a very interesting area, which is, for example, completely out with our present legislation. So no present laws look at this and say, well, this is potentially fiddling with, you know, designer babies, this kind of thing, and that we should set limits on what they can do. Actually, there at the moment, there's no limits, and these technologists know it. So they're going hell for leather to get their technology in place before the law says, hang on a minute, we can't do that.
Right. You know, nanotechnology used to be talked about. Now I think they put a lid on it. They don't want anybody talking about it because they've made tremendous strides in that, advances.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, I don't know quite so much about what's going on over there in the States, but I know right. here in the UK, this whole thing of designer babies is starting to happen. And it's being made clear that this is okay. That it's okay to fiddle with the human embryo and make changes to it. Now, of course, we're being sold this idea that this is going to improve, you know, all they're going to do is fine-tune humans, get rid of genetically inherited diseases. But the thing is, you can end up with some creatures which are half man, half something else. It shows just how bereft of imagination so many of our scientists are, and so many of the people that fund them. That is to say, effectively, it's banks giving these people vast loans in the hope that maybe they'll find something which is going to make them a lot of money. And there's no morality in there. There's no.
Well, that's the key right there. When you get into machines, the machines are there's no moral fiber and principles there, usually. It's a cold decision making device. See, and it doesn't take an emotional. It has no emotional appeal that you can make to it or anything else like that.
No, you're absolutely right. I just think that these things need to keep a real close eye on these because the mainstream press isn't. I mean, just going back to what I was saying about fake news, another thing that these big tech companies are doing, George, is they're just buying up websites and shutting them down. So they'll approach a webmaster and say, look, we think it's a great website, we want to do this and this with it, we want to integrate it into this. So the person says, oh, that's good, and they make an offer. And if I've sort of made an offer by Google, I would be looking at ways of trying to copy that content myself before selling it to them.
Right.
And then, what do? Shut it down.
I got
so they're not interested. They're not interested in anything but controlling. So if they see an area of the internet, I mean, Reddit is one of those sorts of areas, for example, where there's lots and lots and lots going on all different sorts of subjects, which are very easy to follow, well indexed, etc. So you can pick up loads of new information on there. Google will be desperate to get hold of that platform because it's another mechanism by which people can discuss things online. And they've decided quite clearly, the internet is coming to an end. That places where people have been learning things, exchanging information for free for the last couple of decades, they're going to try and shut them down. So they're not only going to make it difficult for people to find them. I mean, on Michael Tyler's website, he's got this article about the dead bankers and about Google censorship. It's well worth having a look. And he goes through a list of something like 10, 15 websites and the traffic that's dropped from them. And he's saying that he's only listed the sites which have got absolutely cast iron research and articles on them. So none of these sort of flaky ones like Bilderberg.org, you know, my site, which well, some people will say.
Oh, man, you got, yeah.
Actually, it's mainly mainstream press articles on there, which are verified, as well as, quite a lot of content which has been scanned in from books about the origins of the Bilderberg Conference. So actually, you know, you might look at it and see it's a bit of a ropey, flaky, old-fashioned website, but the content that's on there is good stuff. But anyway, it's not really about my Bilderberg.org because that's been downlisted massively by Google as well. It's mainly about websites like Counterpunch, for example, the World Socialist website as well. A lot of really well-researched where people have actually been out in the field doing interviews, writing quotes from people actually in the street, this kind of thing, well-resourced content. And the most of these websites are around about, in April, their traffic dropped 50%. So, you know, you can imagine what that would do, say, for example, to a presidential candidate. A presidential candidate's traffic drops 50%. That means that people can't find out who they are.
Right.
So they're much less likely to vote for them. That kind of thing. So Google has this power, and now, George, they're weaponizing it. They're using it day after day to try and steer discussion and debate around the world. I think it's almost like Stalingrad has happened, you know, with Google. Although it's the opposite, of course, because they're the evil guys.
Right.
They don't be evil. They're now getting evil. is they have decided that they're going to cash their chips in and go for broke. So all the real benefits that the Google algorithms had, they're now saying, well, okay, so everyone's kind of got trust and loyalty in us, now we're going to start manipulating more. And I think that the message needs to go out this month, next month, until they change their mind, if they ever do, which I doubt personally, that Google, you cannot trust it anymore. Make sure you've got other search engines ready to go. There's none of them are really, in some ways, you know, certain specialist searches will be quite as good as Google, but you certainly need to be looking around. Even the old-fashioned web crawler, .com. That was one of the first I ever used back in the mid-early 1990s.
We might have to go back to...
And it's now for the alternative news world, it's better than Google. Right. And that's how far we've come.
We might have to go back to text messaging directly and stuff like that more. See what I mean? I mean,
you've got to have a search engine. You've got to have an index to the internet to find out what's out there.
Right.
You know, Google bought up the news groups, didn't they? And then virtually they've now disappeared. You know, so they've done this. They're trying to control what is out there on the internet. And every area, they see the truth being discussed and flourishing amongst freedom fighters.
Right.
What they'll be doing is they'll be identifying it, marking it out with their targeting it, and then they'll nuking it, effectively, taking it out by one means or another. Usually by buying it up and closing it down.
Right, right. Or labeling it as some radical anti-government domestic terrorist type thing, you know.
Or just simply removing it from the index so no one will find it. This
recent Facebook thing that came up, they're delving into it now. It looks like Russian-linked companies bought ads that benefited Black Lives Matter, Bernie Sanders, and Donald Trump, and a lot of other people. You know? So this thing is
attempts to divide and rule at the moment, aren't there? You know, to get civil society in America and Britain and elsewhere at each other's throats. That seems to be the game plan.
Yeah.
Get poor people, poor white people, fighting poor black people. This is the old trick of the British Empire.
Tony, what came to me this afternoon, a friend of mine called me, and he was down at a local grocery store, a big one. I'm not going to say the name. But there were like four or five young girls with a couple of white guys, and they were practicing attacking the white guys. Okay? There was like up above this restaurant, up above this grocery store, they have sort of a pavilion area up there on the second floor. And these people there were about six people, two white guys and a bunch of white girls, whatever. And they were practicing coming in with rubber knives and stabbing this white guy and surrounding him and taking him down. Okay? I mean, Hagman.
Yeah, but, you know, we've had this kind of black on white, white on black racism for a long time. What I'm saying is that the Secret Services and their agents in the press are doing everything they can. I mean, this whole business of the statues was just, you know, almost the perfect psyop.
Yes.
Everybody going nuts, you know.
Yes, at each other's throat. Exactly. Yeah. I know.
So this is what you've got to be aware of. You know, you're being played for fools, folks, if you're going along to these
people. Both you and Ole Domegaard had been spotting these false flag operations going on in Europe. And then y'all spotted that one over there in Virginia also. See what I mean? Charlottesville.
Well, but there's also different types of.
Yeah, there are different types. Exactly.
We had this one the other week in Parsons Green in London,
which
was not a terror attack at all. It was a nutty kid who was already in trouble with the police. His house was under constant surveillance, according to the neighbours.
Okay.
And then he's allowed to walk out of that house, which is supposedly under surveillance, with this bucket of some sort of, you know, cheap. It's not explosives. It's just kind of, you know, like a paraffin or something.
Yeah.
And kerosene. And he then sets fire to it with some fairy lights on a tube train. It goes puff, makes a bit of a bad smell.
Right.
Hardly anything happened. And yet there's a massive terror attack in London. A big dramatic day of upping the terror threat in the whole of the UK.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then they realise, oh, he's just a nutter. He's not really a terrorist. And he had no ability to do anything with this so-called bomb, which wasn't really a bomb. There were people lying about there being a fireball. There was no fireball, according to eyewitnesses, many of the eyewitnesses. I mean, why would they say, no, there was, I didn't see a fireball? They didn't even hear a bang. So this is a whole kind of media confected load of nonsense, which has been encouraged by the mainstream press. And again, you know, this is where you've got to look at these attacks. Are there questions being asked by the journalists of the police? Like, you're saying this is a terrorist attack. What evidence do you have for that?
Right.
That's a basic question, and it should be being asked. It's not even being asked, George.
No. You go back though for several decades here to hardcore reporting where you had to vet your and prove what you were writing and reporting. Some of this stuff today is just it's just a bunch of real quick reporting that's not that accurate.
Well, also, yeah, I mean the journalists simply aren't asking. I mean, when I was at the National Union of Journalists a few years ago, as part of the Ethics Council. We sat down and wrote out a guide to reporting terrorism. It's still floating around, National Union of Journalists Guide to Reporting Reporting Terrorism, along with a load of civil society groups over the space of nearly a year, actually, pulling together all these things. And the idea is just for rookie reporters. You know, these are the things that you should be asking at any terrorist attack.
Right.
And these are the potential places that you might be able to get, I mean, like eyewitness reports and things like that. So obviously, if you can get eyewitness reports that contradict what the police are saying, I mean, we had this time, didn't we? We had Trump tweeting that this guy was known to the police and that the British Home Office and the police here going crazy, saying, how dare he? He's letting out our secrets. Well, it's only because they're embarrassed, because they were following this guy the whole time.
Right.
And he shut down the whole of the tube system, you know?
Yeah.
So they're just it's theatre, George, it's theatre, a lot of this stuff. And yet, of course, occasionally there is a real attack, which is either... is either set up by MI5 or the FBI or something like that. They have even sometimes, in many of these cases, even supplied the weapons or explosives. Is that the only explanation for some of these attacks? So these people who are supposed to have been under constant surveillance, how on earth do they get hold of explosives? How do they get hold of guns in Britain? Obviously, it's a bit easier in the US. How do they get hold of ammunition? You know, that cannot happen if they're actually under surveillance. And, of course, at which point the MI5 and the FBI crawl under a rock and disappear. They say, I'm sorry, we've got no comment.
Right, exactly. There are 3,000 that are under surveillance now in the UK. Is that right? Something like that?
Well, that's what they say. I'm not sure I believe it. Not really sure.
Do they have resources to cover those people, 3,000 people? That takes a lot of resources, doesn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, we've also had Nazi groups here in Britain called Scottish Dawn and NS131 been banned this week under the terrorism laws. There's definitely seems to be a bit of a swing towards taking these far-right groups a bit more seriously because particularly since the German episode a few months ago where there was a German lieutenant... he was just a lieutenant, I think, in the German army... was discovered to be planning a bomb attack at Vienna Airport. Only thing was, he was had a double identity as a Syrian fake Syrian refugee, and he'd been going around doing all this stuff with this fake Syrian refugee identity. His plan was to blow up his bomb in Vienna Airport and then let the police trace it back to this fake identity and go on the TV and tell everyone, oh, it's a Syrian refugee that's blown up all these people in Vienna. So I think that's one of the things, and it looks as if he was involved in this fascist German group. So, you know, this is where we are now. Is I think whenever there's an attack, we need to really ask ourselves very, 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 very strong questions about who is really behind it. Because the far right are desperate to actually get this whole thing kicked off. And let's not forget, the far right are often associated with nationalism, right? They're not. They're internationalists, right? There's an internationalist, just like the Socialist International, although I don't think that you could really say that they're equivalent, because the Socialist International is much more out in the open, much more easy for someone to stroll in and have a chat to them. The Fascist International is much, much quieter, and I think you could probably link that to the Bilderbergs, looking at the effectively Bilderberg seems to be a kind of recruiting thing for the fascists, that is to say people that they might want to put in power in a bank or somewhere else, or most probably in a political system somewhere. But the other one is Le Cercle, and this is a fascist group which has been going for many years in Europe, and I think it's probably where you'll find some of the planning for most of the terrorism that's going on in the Western world today, and yet not a single mainstream news outlet pays them any attention whatsoever, even though it looks as if they are at the heart of the terrorist threat.
So are you talking about Le Cercle? Le Cercle?
Le Cercle, yeah.
Okay, I'm aware of them. I know who they are.
It's been going for quite a while. I mean, if you look at any of the... I mean, for example, for anyone in whatever country you are, have a look and see who from your country is in that organisation. I mean, if you're here in Britain, it was chairing it for a long time, was the Tory MP Jonathan Aitken. He was at the very much the far right of the Tory party. I mean, really, a racist, fascistic guy. Amazing that he was allowed to stay in the party, really. But they're not so amazing if you think, well, maybe he's a link man between the Fascist International and the Tories.
Right. Well, you know, at Davos, you've got 2,500 corporations at meet. And that comprises corporate fascism, the way I've always described it.
Well, yeah, I think that is a little bit more open to scrutiny.
Well, but the power they have and the money, though, manifest in a dominance in the way we're thinking and talking. See what I mean? They're bigger than some countries.
Let me just run through a few news stories from this week.
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, a lot of this stuff you don't get to hear in the U.S.
Sure, go ahead.
We've got, first of all, the survivors of the Grenfell Tower tragedy.
Yeah.
The locals there, I've spoken to some of the people who live in Kensington, they call it the atrocity.
Oh, no.
Right? They don't talk about it as a tragedy. This is the atrocity. In other words, somebody has done this to us deliberately, and there's still been no proper arrests. But anyway, the Grenfell Tower survivors have been forced, some of them, to use food banks. In other words, they have been starved of money by the government, who are supposed to be helping them, but they're not. And the local authority, that is Kensington and Chelsea Council, which is Conservative run, has been accused of unprecedented incompetence. One disabled survivor has been found in her own excrement when she was completely forgotten by her private company that was supposed to be caring for her. So this is how the government and the social services are looking after the people who have managed to survive that horrific atrocity, the fire. So that story is hardly being reported. I mean, I don't know if you'd heard of it at all over there, but so little. Also, Prince Philip has been accused publicly of cheating on the Queen by a Member of Parliament, which is quite interesting to see. I mean, I don't know. There are quite a lot of Republicans starting to get going over here, particularly with the greed of the royal family insisting on public money to help them refurbish Buckingham Palace when she is almost certainly the richest woman in the world.
Right.
She wants taxpayers' money to fit up, make Buckingham Palace get it up to scratch. And so there's a lot of people starting to think, well, maybe the monarchy has had its time. Or maybe the Queen should just get out of the way and let William take over. He seems to be a bit more of a decent lad.
Yes. That's a good idea. What about this UK audit scandal over there?
Auditing?
Yeah. It's some kind of an audit scandal over there about accounting
firms? Maybe do, yeah. I mean, I imagine you're talking about KPMG scandal. Well, this is where the KPMG, the P in KPMG, by the way, stands for Pete.
Okay.
P-E-A-T. And I think the guy's name's Graham Pete.
Okay.
It was from Pete Marwick, I think, originally.
Yeah.
To become KPMG, which was a big auditing firm in the city.
Sure.
He was the keeper of the privy purse of Her Majesty the Queen. He then went on to arrange Charles and Camilla's wedding, then to become private personal secretary to Prince Charles, and he's also a top Freemason.
Right.
So there you go. These are the sorts of people who fix these accounts. And KPMG have just been let off by something called the Financial Reporting Council, the FRC. They are supposed to do the regulations for the City of London, but they don't really. And what it turns out, the Mail on Sunday, or the Daily Mail, this is money section, has uncovered the names of something like five different KPMG people who are on the board of the regulators. So they're just, there is no punishment.
Oh, my gosh.
Their crime was getting 48 billion, that is £48 billion, in the wrong columns in the accounts of the HBOS Bank. So when they were bought, there was completely, basically, it was a complete load of rubbish. Their audit wasn't worth the paper it was written on, and they've just been given a very, very gentle slap on the wrist and said, don't do it again. The excuse being that, the only excuse being that other auditors have sometimes been almost as bad. So there is no law anymore.
That's lawless, isn't it, Tony? There's no law.
Not in the city of London at all.
Yeah. When it comes to financial, see, it's financial.
One of the biggest scandals, I mean, sticking on the city,
yeah,
is this woman, Rona Fairhead. She was the chair of the risk committee,
yeah,
at HSBC when this money laundering scandal was going on in Mexico, and, you know, they were refitting their banks so that they could accept suitcases full of cash in Mexico from
right. Yeah.
Airports.
We need
that. She was in charge of the risk committee. I mean, you couldn't make this stuff up, could you? So she was saying to herself, well, it's a bit risky, isn't it? We might get fined. How much will we get fined? Oh, I'll tell you what, let's do it. Because she was then made chairman of the BBC.
Oh, my God.
Now she's being given a ministerial post in the Treasury. She's been made a lord. Or a lady, you know, given a life peerage, put into the House of Lords, and suddenly she's a minister.
Oh my God!
So this is how corrupt our country is nowadays. Now I think there are some forces within the City of London who may think, well, look, this is going a bit too far, and maybe it's time we stop this, you know. But the thing is, who's going to put these people like Rona Fairhead in jail for being the money launderer that she is? I describe her as the money launderer on the run. Even though she's just walking the streets, she should be locked up.
Well, we have the same kind of stuff here. We have the same kind of similar cases here. See,
I just think it's blatant. The other thing is, you know, the silent weapons for quiet wars from a few years ago. I mean, it's the 1970s, I think it came out. Well, that's happening on the streets here. It probably is happening in the US too. We've got this thing called universal credit, which is this sinister. Sort of, I don't know, like Star Trek sounding, Star Wars sounding, you know, you've got so many credits today, you know, to spend.
Yeah.
Futuristic system where there's no real money, it's just, you've run out of credits, you know, oh right, so there's no more air for me then, okay.
Right.
And the system, universal credit, is rolling out across Britain for everybody that's on a low income, which is, well, you know, something like a quarter of the population who are in work, are happy to claim benefits too because the work is so appallingly paid. So all these people are going to start getting this new so-called benefit, and the trouble is, George, it don't work, does it? So most of the time when the money's supposed to arrive in their bank accounts, it just doesn't arrive.
Oh, my God.
And so the government just throws up its arms and says, oh, sorry, you know, you better get a job. Oh, sorry, there's no jobs for you. Tough.
Well, the economics. Now, that Caledonia is fighting for their independence down there in Spain?
Oh, you mean Catalonia?
Yeah, Catalonia. Excuse me, Catalonia. Yeah.
They're fighting tonight, that's for sure, because they've had all the police occupying the polling stations. That is, the central Madrid police have been coming into Catalonia and occupying schools. Now, this is designed, I think, to set off a civil war in Spain. You know, it's extremely provocative. It's quite clearly a fascist operation using fascist police, fascist police commanders, in order to shut down the referendum. It's also, you know, part of the judicial captured judiciary, really, what you might call a judicial coup. You know, so the idea is that there should be some fair opportunity for Catalonia to have a referendum if they want, but Madrid have just said no, you know, so obviously Catalonia have said, well, we want our referendum. They don't trust Madrid anymore, and this, I think, you know, this is a very clear message from Madrid to Catalans that you either obey us or, you know, we're going to either have a civil war or a police state. So that's a very good reason for people to be voting yes to the independence referendum tomorrow, and every time they get an opportunity, I'm sure they will be, George, because we're seeing this under the European Union, we're seeing an increasing domination by big corporations, by monopoly capitalism, which is a failed
capitalism. Monopolistic capitalism, you're right, crony capitalism, that's what the problem
capitalism
is.
Capitalism is dead, yeah. Folks. Died in 2008. Ever since then, the whole system has been propped up on life support by heroin. That is to say, quantitative easing. This is not capitalism. This is making money up out of thin air and pumping it into a dying patient. And there's no way that's capitalism. It's gone. They're talking about, oh, is this a crisis of capitalism? Look, it's dead. It's as dead as a dodo. And the evidence is that they're pumping all these hundreds of billions of pounds in, and it's still not reviving. So they're keeping it just about alive for long enough to think what the hell they're going to do. But it has died.
What I'm saying is this crony capitalistic system is not working anymore. That's not working. But capitalism itself is a different
thing. Those who have the power are using the money system and the death of capitalism to just buy up everything on the cheap. So everything which is starting to collapse, they're coming around with their free money from nowhere that they've magicked out of thin air to buy the stuff up for nothing.
Yeah, well, that's been going on for centuries now. Yeah. You know, and Bank of England, it was right there at the beginning of that.
Anybody with some investments, I would suggest get your investments into Russia or China. Because in the UK and in Europe and in the United States, a real crash could be coming. I mean, we've been saying this for a long time, George, on and off, you know, mentioning it could be coming. But I think we're getting to the stage where you can start to see, you know, in Switzerland you've got negative interest rates, right? Don't put your money in
Switzerland. Right, exactly.
Negative interest. Go to Russia, you'll get 8% or something. The other thing is that it's a very strong economy, and it's an economy where their banks are regulated properly. And you know that some banker is not just going to pocket the money and disappear off to the Maldives, you know?
Yeah, well, Vesco did that. Right. Remember Vesco way back? Vesco sold a lot of money off of one of those offshore funds and went to Cuba and Costa Rica, stuff like that.
Yeah, so anyway, finally, I'd like to talk about this article by Thierry Mason, I found absolutely... I don't know if you've seen it, George, but it's been, I think, really interesting. I mean, this world we're living in gets crazier and crazier every day. But this is, I'm not actually sure of the dates, but I'm pretty sure it's a report which was by some generals. Look, it's been leaked, right? So who's really sure? I'm not really sure. Whereabouts it's been leaked from. All I can tell you is that it's one of the most explosive reports I've ever seen. It's about what is the US's real plan for the world, and it's supposedly from 2003. I'll give you some of the details in a minute, but I'm not sure if you're aware of this whole plan of actually making whole areas of the world in chaos, so that the only way that anyone can get at the resources is with military assistance.
With what assistance?
Military.
Military. Oh.
So the idea being that you create basket case areas of the world. Say, for example, the whole of the northwest of South America. That is to say, all around Venezuela, Colombia, etc. The idea is to create civil wars all around those areas. And just to say, well, if you want to get the resources, then you're going to have to cooperate with us. Us being the mafia, the US mafia, who will have lines into all of the groups that are creating the chaos.
Did you ever hear of Copper Green? Copper Green, Tony?
No, tell me.
You need to look up Copper Green. This sounds like what this is about, okay? Seymour Hersh wrote an article in the New Yorker years ago about Copper Green. Anthony Schaefer had that deleted from his book in his second edition of the book he wrote. And so Copper Green is a worldwide system of the United States intelligence agencies helping countries to get rid of their troublemakers and then to consolidate the power in these countries for a price. Okay? It's turning into a big business, see? That sounds exactly like what you're saying here.
Yeah, it does. It sounds very similar, yeah. The idea really being that I think one of the most fascinating things, and I would suggest maybe if you can do this on your website, George,
okay,
is to share the picture, the map.
Okay.
Because this map is called the non-integrating gap countries.
Non-integrating gap countries, okay.
Okay. Yeah, and the article is on the Voltaire Network. And I don't know, I mean, if you know Thierry Masson and his work, he has very close connections to French intelligence.
Okay.
And as you know, they're pretty good. They're actually pretty good, the French intelligence services. They were in Vietnam, etc. In the beginning, of course, they realized the whole thing was going to be a nightmare. They got out, etc. But this article, Thierry's connections with them are pretty legendary, really. He was the first person I saw to write any credible literature on the 9/11 attacks, and it was published in 2001. So it was within a couple of months he had the first books about 9/11 out, and before anybody else I've ever seen. Anyway, so
if you could text me on our chat channel some kind of a reference on that.
Oh, well, I'll text you a link to it, George.
Yeah, text a link to it. That'll get me there.
The article's called The U.S. Military Project for the World.
That's what Copper Green is. That's what Copper Green is.
And it's published on the 22nd of August, 2017. And I think, you know, he's had a lot of criticism, Jerry. I mean, I think maybe this is something that you people have been known about in the U.S. for a while, but it's starting to be looked at more seriously by scholars around the world.
Well, the neocons fit into all of these, this type of thinking, see? The neoconservatives. See?
The Straussians.
Yeah, the Straussians out of Chicago and all of those people, they're right there, and the Israelis and all this other stuff. They're just right there.
You won't hear a whisper of this on the mainstream press.
You won't, not a whisper. No. No.
Even though it's the most important program going on in the world today, and it explains everything.
Right, right. Well, I got this from an intelligence, army intelligence guy that was in Iraq, and that had the head of ISIS under arrest before he became ISIS. You know what I mean? And he put me on to some of this stuff way back. A couple of years ago. So that's how I got on to some of this stuff here, you know. But then Seymour Hersh had that one article, but you won't find they've gone around and erased Copper Green off of everything in the websites, you know.
Well, we're definitely, I mean, I don't know if you can find anything. You probably won't find it on Google anymore, will you?
No, exactly. It probably won't be there after we finish talking. Who knows? But I'll send you a copy of whatever the article. I think I've got it somewhere here. But I mean, Tony, you're delving into this stuff on a real deep basis, and that's where I really respect your reporting and your investigative work.
Also, what about this missile test that Trump was tweeting? He was so disgusted that the Iranians had tested another ballistic missile. You know, horrid Iranians.
Yeah.
The Iranians, who we managed to persuade Saddam to attack back in the 1990s, you know, the 80s. Look, I mean, Trump, you got it all wrong, mate. There was no ballistic missile test. The piece of footage you saw was from 7 years ago. Come on, get your finger out. This is why we need proper verification of what's going on in the world. We do need to have that. And I think, actually, channels like Russia Today, even though, of course, it's still very biased. I actually met a guy called Alexei Kuznetsov, who was the deputy news editor of Russia Today. Had a little chat with him and a coffee, and I said to him, "Look, come on, Alexei, if you were to have some criticism of Putin on here, everyone would be watching you."
Exactly.
He gave me the 1,000-yard stare, right? Which means
the 1,000-yard stare. Oh man, yeah. Okay.
He looked right through me, you know, so...
You can't
do this. This is a real pity. If we could only have some decent mainstream media anywhere in the world that was able to criticise the country where it was from, even its own president, if it's an individual corporation, they would gather a massive audience. And they're not really interested in audiences. They're not interested in advertising revenue, really. They're interested in bending people's minds.
Propaganda. Propaganda. That's it.
They're interested in conning you.
That's it. Propaganda.
What about these F-35s? I think this is actually a Russian news story. It looks like they may be retiring 100 of these F-35s.
Well, they're a catastrophe as far as operation cost and everything.
They could be retired from combat rather than given a new software upgrade.
Yeah.
So they think that the software upgrade isn't going to do anything useful, that the plane itself is falling apart before it's even flown.
Right. I mean, and the cost is horrendous. What they did was they just ripped off the taxpayer on much of this stuff today. See?
I think it's a fair bet that the Pentagon is not relying on air superiority in the next war.
Well, I have doubts now that some of our military equipment may not work at all. See what I mean?
We had explosives detectors that didn't do anything.
Remember they bragged about knocking down the North Korean missiles, but no, they haven't done it yet. Now, we might have used some laser types to sabotage some of his launches, but we don't know for sure about that. But it looks like they're moving missiles from one of his testing facilities to somewhere else right now. But my idea, huh?
One thing I must ask you, I've heard that there's a $1.5 trillion being spent on upgrading the whole U.S. nuclear bomb force.
I don't know. I can't verify that.
This was started by Obama, and the final signing off was last week by Trump. But $1.5 trillion to upgrade all America's nuclear weapons. It does make you wonder if they've got their priorities right.
Right. But this THAAD missile thing has been reported not to be fully capable or reliable, even. Okay, there have been rumors that it misfires, it doesn't work sometimes. Okay, and they're shipping these anti-missile missiles over there, and they might not even work. You know, I think
one thing. Is the Russian stuff is fully tested and it works.
Right. We have a lot of people in our industries here, whatever, and especially government related, they go to work but they don't work. You know what I mean? They draw a paycheck. And the efficiency of what they're doing, I think, has declined drastically. And so I don't know. And then we have all this top secret. 2,500 companies were created after 9/11. To do security work for the Pentagon and for the U.S. government. And what the hell are they doing but going against patriots and alternative news people like me and you? See what I mean?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I mean, certainly we're coming back to talk about fake news again. I mean, we have Trump tweeting fake news. It is definitely a propagandistic type of world we're living in. I don't think there's much doubt about that now, and I think we need to be aware that we're about to be bamboozled like we were over 9/11. Although, I mean, we did a show a few weeks ago, George, with a guy, an old friend of mine from the mid-noughties, a guy called Ian Henshaw. And Ian is a writer here in the UK. He runs a coffee shop in London as well, a really nice coffee shop. If you're ever in town, pop in and say hello. And he's there, and in the Portobello Road, I think it is. Yeah. And he's written a book called 9/11, The New Evidence, which came out, must be 8 years ago now. But it's a fantastic little sort of pocket book. Anybody that's serious, that wants to have a little look at 9/11, even these years afterwards, a lot more people are now realizing, look, this whole thing is a complete con from start to finish.
Yeah.
It's a brilliant, I think, a brilliant little way of doing it. But anyway, we got him on a few weeks ago to talk through the sort of 16 years since the 9/11 attacks.
Right.
And I think for us, the big conclusion was the next 9/11. We need to be aware
that
there's
going to
be something else big, big happen, which is going to be used. This whole fake news thing is going to be used to attempt to discredit people that criticize it when it comes. Now, I don't know what it's going to be. It could be a nuclear false flag attack. It could be chemical biological false flag attack. It could be that combined with financial complete collapse. But you can be sure that this, when it happens, is the work of the New World Order, that there is a fascist elite behind it, and that that is the signal that everybody needs to be prepared for a pretty horrific time to come, as these fascists turn their guns on their own people.
Yes, Tony, you couldn't have said it any better. But I believe it's got to be at a level that is mortifying to the average public. See what I mean? That really mortifies the public and scares the hell out of them. See what I mean?
Well, that's right. And also that there will be fixes will be proffered to the public. So there will be, okay, we're going to have to do this. We've got to do this. We've got to do this. They will be being bounced into it. Lovely to see Naomi Klein, the author of The Shock Doctrine, over in Britain last week, talking to the Labour Party conference. So, you know, this is great to see the what is effectively a pretty radical view that governments are using these big terrorist attacks in order to try and bounce the population into giving up their civil liberties in the middle of a party conference of a mainstream political party in Britain, which actually, by the way, is only a whisker away from power here in the UK.
Okay. So,
I mean, it's a while because Theresa May has got another 4 years to run. If she can manage it, and she's got no political credibility whatsoever, this woman. I mean, she wasn't even elected to be leader of the Tory party, and she nearly lost the vote over the recent election. But I think Brexit is going to happen, and I think a lot of the people in Catalonia and in Spain are looking over at Britain a bit jealously, saying, oh, God, if only we could have a referendum like you did.
Right, right. But, gosh, these central governments, though, are not going to let go of those outlets. Well, I believe Catalonia, I think they're responsible for, what, 40% of the Spanish economy? Does that sound right?
I don't think it's that much, no, because it's mainly around the city of Barcelona.
Right, right.
On the seaside. And a lot of tourist traffic there.
Right.
But it's an important cultural part of Spain. And, you know, obviously, I mean, it's a bit like here, say, for example, in Britain. Say, for example, if the Welsh had a devolution election referendum and they decided... The maddest thing about this Catalonia referendum, George, is that actually it was pretty certain that people in Catalonia were going to vote to stay within Spain.
Okay.
That might just be lies. It might be fixed polls, because we've had that in the Trump-Clinton presidency election. We've had that in Brexit, right? Complete lies being told beforehand as polls.
Right,
but,
the polls.
The indications were that the people were going to vote to stay within Spain.
Right.
And this action by the Spanish government to close down, to make an attempt to close down the referendum, which is actually one of the, you know, it's a very exciting thing, isn't it? I mean, you've seen also the same kind of thing going on, the referendum over in Crimea after the coup in Kiev.
Yeah, and Kurdistan, too, had theirs, see?
They did. They certainly did. Well, Kurdistan is another story.
See, but it seems to be they want to break off into these smaller, entities, see?
I mean, are you familiar with the map of the Middle East by Ralph, Lieutenant Colonel Ralph Peters?
Is it the over enlarged Israel or the extended Israel?
It's actually saying that the Middle East will be extended to something like 17 or 20 countries, and Free Kurdistan is one of them. So
okay.
You do wonder if this Kurdistan referendum is something to do with the Pentagon's plan for what should happen to the Middle East, which is coming to fruition. So that's why a lot of people are a bit concerned about it. But I think on the other side, everybody wants the Kurds to have their homeland. They deserve it. You know, they've been split between Iran, Turkey, and Iraq since the end of the Ottoman Empire. Give them their own country. They certainly deserve it. But this is part of, I think, the plan to decide what countries they're going to be boundaries in the Middle East. A bit like the Sykes-Picot plan. The only thing is now it's out in the open before it's even happened. Whereas Sykes-Picot was only made public after the Russian Revolution, when the Bolsheviks Trotskyites, etc., leaked it to the international public, the Sykes-Picot plan. So we're living in a fascinating information age where things like the Sykes-Picot plan can be leaked well before they even happen. And what amazes me about this Jerry Mason article that you were calling it, what was it, copper green?
Copper green, yeah, copper green.
Yeah, is that this is also leaked to the world. So it, the X-Files is so true, George, isn't it, when it says the truth is out there. It is. It's just the mainstream media are burying it. Google is delisting it, demonetizing it, trying to shut it up as much as it possibly can. And that's why we need to be more vigilant than ever, scrying out and searching for the truth. Because we're up against an enormous army of psychological warfare people in Google, in the National Security Agency, in the CIA, over here in Britain too, GCHQ, some of them, and other places who are trying to bury the truth. And obviously that is, like I said before, that is, you know, this is a very clear indication that war could be coming. If they don't want you to get at the facts, that means that something's cooking.
Yeah, we worked with GCHQ over in Berlin, West Berlin.
You did?
Yeah, well, they were next door to us up on top of the Teufelsberg. It's a big hill over there in West Berlin. I was in the ASA. Army Security Agency.
What did you make of the GCHQ people? What year was this?
This was 1965, and they had an operations hut there, you'd have to call it. We had a much larger building. We had four wings and stuff, but we couldn't really go over to. We just said hello to them. I never worked with them personally, see, because we were totally separated from them, okay? But their compound was inside the larger compound. They went their way and we went our way. See what I mean? But we were both reporting back to like Men with Hill there in England and all that good stuff. See what I mean? And we work for NSA, who we work for.
Yeah, I've been up to Men with Hill.
Yeah, but they had
in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, that was a joint.
It's in the middle of nowhere in the North York Moors.
Yeah, well, that's where they, the idea to record everything came out of Men with Hill from one of those operators over there, one of those NSA operators. He said, well, we're recording this and this and this, why don't we record it all? So they started, way back, started recording everything. Okay? But Men with Hill had to do more with satellite interception stuff than anything, because all the geodesic dome had,
I think they call it total information awareness, don't they?
Yeah, and it means the people that are against the money system, the people that are the patriots and that are against big government and tyrannical government, these are the people they're after right now with all these
mechanisms. Well, I mean, the thing is, just a minute, when you say big government, I don't agree with you on that at all. I think we do need fairly big government. We need government which is running some of our major national utilities like water, like gas.
Well, I believe that. I went back, and I will agree with you to a certain extent, on the Thatcher thing, when they went with public-private partnership deals, they destroyed the railroad system there in England, looked like to me.
They sold the whole lot. They talked about it as selling off the family.
Now the airports are owned by
the government. And any sensible government needs to do is sit down and say, well, how much of this is infrastructure?
Right.
If it's infrastructure of the nation, we're going to run it at cost. Okay, so we're not going to allow a private company to charge 10 times more what it's costing them for the public to use this utility. Yeah. So that's why you need to have government running things like
water. Well, there are certain things like that. I will agree with you. Right now, the airports in the UK are owned by that Spanish corporation down there in Spain.
Well, this is the joke of the century, isn't it?
I mean,
the joke, so,
you
the
know,
Germans mopping it up.
You should own their own airports, you know.
World War II, the Germans are buying up Britain.
Yeah.
But look, the other thing is, though, it's the 50th anniversary this weekend of a series called The Prisoner. It's a drama series that went out on the British ITV, Channel 3, back in 1967. It's one of the best bits of drama you'll ever see. It's written largely, or certainly devised by Patrick McGoohan, the actor who played Danger Man in the 1960s black and white series. And it was commissioned by Lou Grade, who was the impresario running most of ITC and Channel 3 in Britain at the time, the new independent TV, which was set up to compete with the BBC. And I was very privileged to interview yesterday a guy who's just done a film with the actor. He filmed him years ago. He's died now, Patrick McGoohan. But the series is well worth watching, George. And if you ever get a chance to watch it, it's called The Prisoner. It starts off with this guy who's a secret agent. He wants to resign. He's had enough with his boss. He's banging his fist on the table.
Right.
You know, as you, if you were a secret agent and these people were doing what they're doing, which they are, he's banging his fist on the table. And so he decides, I'm resigning. Yeah?
Yeah.
He hands in his